Welcome to the year 2022. I don't know about you, but that just sounds like the future, you know, 2022. But before you know it, this year will be over just like the last one was. And that's the way this thing works here. Days turn into weeks, and weeks turn into months, and months turn into years. And if we're not mindful of the time that we have, it passes right through our fingers. It was a few weeks ago that Rob called me on a Saturday morning, and he said he had an idea about having a yearly theme. And I told him, it's funny that you say that. I was actually thinking about possibly having a theme for the year myself. I just haven't really come up with a good idea yet. And he said, I don't know where this came from, but I just sort of woke up with this thought. The people had a mind to work. And I said, that sounds great. And so we talked about it, and we've been planning it for the past few weeks. And so we are starting today the introduction of a yearly theme. It comes from Nehemiah chapter 4 and verse 6. And the lesson today will really be from Nehemiah and help us to introduce this idea so that we can think about it throughout the year. And I'll just say, there are a lot of people that are not here today because of sickness, or maybe traveling as well, and I hope that some of them are able to tune in and listen to this online. But if there are people that are not here and are not able to listen to it, this is a lesson that I would encourage every one of us to listen to. So if somebody is not here, maybe pass on the link to them online, because I think this lesson is very foundational for what we want to accomplish this year. And the basic idea is that if we want to build up what is lacking, it's going to take work. It's going to take a decision and a resolve to do what's necessary, even if it's hard, even if it takes some sacrifice, even if it takes some determination, that is what it will take to actually build up anything that might be lacking. And so on the first Sunday of every month, I'm planning to preach a lesson in our yearly theme. And as you can see on the screen, today is the introduction. We're going to talk about Nehemiah and his example and the people's example about a mind to work. And each month, we're going to focus on a particular aspect that we can work on as a congregation. And so these lessons are meant to be very practical. They are selected based on the things that we think that we have particular room to grow in. But they're things that all of us need to hear and all of us need to constantly be reminded of. The first four lessons, February, March, April, and May, all come from Acts, where we see that the first Christians dedicated themselves to the apostles' doctrine, to fellowship, to the breaking of bread, and prayer. And so we're going to focus on dedicating ourselves to those same four things, and then from there go on to talk about other subjects, other areas of work that we can emphasize. But today's theme, or today's lesson, is the introduction. It's a mind to work. And what's important to realize about the book of Nehemiah is that just as with Samuel and Kings and Chronicles, the books of Ezra and Nehemiah, which appear in our English Bibles as separate books, originally were one book in the Hebrew Bible. And so as such, the book Ezra and Nehemiah tells the story of Jewish reforms after returning from Babylonian captivity. If you remember, Israel went into Assyrian captivity, and for a period of time, Judah was left alone in the southern kingdom, but then Judah went to Babylon, and as the prophet Jeremiah prophesied, they were there for 70 years. And it was in the year 538 BC that Cyrus the Great issued a decree to return and to rebuild. And you can read about how they began construction of the temple in the book of Ezra. And they stopped the construction and they restarted, but eventually they finished around 515 BC. And you can read about that in Ezra chapter 6. But over 90 years after Cyrus's decree to return and rebuild, the walls of Jerusalem were still not rebuilt. In fact, it had been over 140 years since they had been torn down by Nebuchadnezzar. And that's the issue that concerns Nehemiah. Is he realizes that there is work to do. He realizes that these ruins should not be ruins, that the walls need to be rebuilt. And what's amazing is that in the book of Nehemiah, we read that this work that had been put off for so many years is actually completed in just 52 days. In Nehemiah chapter 6 in verse 15, it tells us that they finished the work in 52 days. And so what I want us to do is to think about what all was involved in Nehemiah's mind and the minds of the people. How did they have a mind to work, and what can we learn from their example? So to begin, I want to talk about the conviction that Nehemiah had. We're going to look in Nehemiah chapter 1 and read verses 1 through 11. The words of Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah. Now it happened in the month of Chislev, in the 20th year, as I was in Susa, the citadel, that Hanani, one of my brothers, came with certain men from Judah. And I asked them concerning the Jews who escaped, who had survived the exile, and concerning Jerusalem. And they said to me, the remnant there in the province who had survived the exile is in great trouble and shame. The wall of Jerusalem is broken down, and its gates are destroyed by fire. If you were to stop there for just a second, this introduces the setting for what we're about to read. For whatever reason, Nehemiah did not go back with the rest of the people. There were still people that stayed behind in Babylon. And Nehemiah is in this capital city, Susa, when he gets news that the walls still have not been rebuilt. Now, look at how he reacts, beginning in verse 4. As soon as I heard these words, I sat down and wept and mourned for days, and I continued fasting and praying before the God of heaven. And I said, O Lord God of heaven, the great and awesome God who keeps covenant and steadfast love with those who love him and keep his commandments, let your ear be attentive and your eyes open to hear the prayer of your servant that I now pray before you day and night for the people of Israel, your servants, confessing the sins of the people of Israel, which we have sinned against you. Even I and my father's house have sinned. We have acted very corruptly against you and have not kept the commandments, the statutes, and the rules that you commanded your servant Moses. Remember the word that you commanded your servant Moses, saying, if you are unfaithful, I will scatter you among the peoples. But if you return to me and keep my commandments and do them, though your outcasts are in the uttermost parts of heaven, from there I will gather and bring them to the place that I have chosen to make my name dwell there. They are your servants and your people whom you have redeemed by your great power and by your strong hand. O Lord, let your ear be attentive to the prayer of your servant and to the prayer of your servants who delight to fear your name, and give success to your servant today and grant him mercy in the sight of this man. Now, I was cupbearer to the king. Nehemiah is in the Persian capital city of Susa when he gets word about the state of Jerusalem, but I want you to notice how he reacts in verse 4. Nehemiah hears that things are not as they should be, and he takes that seriously. You know, now might be a good time for us to think about how we react when we realize things are not as they should be, or maybe not all that they could be. If somebody talks to you about a scripture that seems convicting, if you hear a sermon that sort of steps on your toes a little bit, if somebody points out that there are things lacking in this place, in this church, that we could do better, do we get upset? Do we get offended? Do we just sort of ignore that and just kind of hope that we can push it out of our minds? But look at what Nehemiah does. Nehemiah weeps and mourns and fasts and prays. It might be good for us to do all of those things. It might be good for us to weep and mourn and fast and pray. If we're convicted about God's things, those are the kinds of reactions that God's people have. And Nehemiah confesses that he and his people have sinned. You see that in verses 6 and 7? He doesn't make excuses for them. And he doesn't just put all the blame on them, but he puts himself right with the people. And he says in verse 7, we have acted very corruptly against you and have not kept the commandments, the statutes, and the rules that you commanded. He takes ownership. And if we're going to develop a mind to work, it has to start with a conviction like this. That we don't want to make excuses. We don't want to avoid what needs to be done. But that it affects us on a deep level that motivates us to take action. And that's exactly what happens next in this story. When people are convicted, they make changes that they need to make. And so at the beginning of chapter 2, what Nehemiah does is he goes to the king and he gets permission to actually go to Jerusalem himself. He's gotten news that the walls are laying in ruins, and so he decides, okay, I need to go see this myself, and he gets permission to go there. And he evaluates the state of the ruins. Let's go ahead and look and see in verses 11 through 16 of chapter 2. It says, "So I went to Jerusalem and was there 3 days. Then I arose in the night, I and a few men with me, and I told no one what my God had put into my heart to do for Jerusalem. There was no animal with me but the one on which I rode. I went out by night by the valley gate to the dragon spring and to the dung gate, and I inspected the walls of Jerusalem that were broken down and its gates that had been destroyed by fire. Then I went on to the fountain gate and to the king's pool, but there was no room for the animal that was under me to pass. Then I went up in the night by the valley and inspected the wall, and I turned back and entered by the valley gate and so returned. And the officials did not know where I had gone or what I was doing, and I had not yet told the Jews, the priests, the nobles, the officials, and the rest who were to do the work." So Nehemiah decides to go and see the state of the walls himself. And notice that he inspects the ruins by night. You know, he doesn't want to draw too much attention to what's going on. He doesn't want to just be alarming the people of a problem unless he's inspected the problem himself. And so it's very wise what he does. Night after night, covertly, he goes out and he looks at the walls. He wants to make sure that he has a solution to the problem. He wants to make sure that he understands how to handle the problem himself. You've probably known people that just sort of like to complain all the time. There are some people that can find a reason to complain about almost anything. Even when things are good, they can find reasons to be dissatisfied. You know what I've noticed about people like that? People like that like attention. People like that don't normally offer solutions. They just like to complain. That's not Nehemiah. Nehemiah is quietly and decisively inspecting the problem and trying to figure out what they can do about it. And he's thorough. Do you notice that he goes from place to place? And in verse 14, he actually goes to some places that are so bad, his animal can't even pass. You know, you imagine him riding a donkey or a horse or whatever, and he gets to a place where the ruins are just in such disarray that he has to leave his animal and sort of like crawl over the rocks to get around and see everything. And when you read about Nehemiah doing this, and you think about these are the walls of Jerusalem, you might think, how did Israel let this get so bad? How has Israel let this problem sit here for so long? For 90 years after Cyrus's decree, they've just sort of been like crawling over the rubble. Well, when things aren't as they should be, it's easy to get used to them. And we might even stop noticing that there's any problem at all. Do you know what it's like to become nose blind? That ever happened to you? You live in your house day after day, and you might not notice how bad that trash stinks in the kitchen, or how that room smells where the dog sleeps at night. You know, you don't notice anything, but then sometimes you leave, and you come back after a few days, and you walk in, and you say, oh, man, has it always been this bad? Well, yeah, you just sort of got used to it. You see, I think that's sort of the problem that Israel had. They have seen these ruins for so long, they've gotten so used to things just being the way that they are, that they're not alarmed about anything being amiss. It's just the way it's always been. And I'll suggest that we can do the same thing. That we might not realize how things need to change, because that's just the way they've been for a very long time. And so it would do us good to accurately evaluate ourselves, accurately evaluate where we stand, evaluate what needs to be done with a willingness to act on it. And so after Nehemiah is convicted himself of the problem and he evaluates the problem himself, the next thing he does is he mobilizes the people.
He knows that this is not something that he can just fix by himself, but that he needs the people to cooperate with him and that they can work together to accomplish this task. I want you to read verses 17 through 20 with me. Then I said to them, "You see the trouble we are in, how Jerusalem lies in ruins with its gate burned. Come, let us build the wall of Jerusalem that we may no longer suffer derision." And I told them of the hand of my God that had been upon me for good, and also of the words that the king had spoken to me. And they said, "Let us rise up and build." So they strengthened their hands for the good work. But when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite servant and Geshem the Arab heard of it, they jeered at us and despised us and said, "What is this thing that you are doing? Are you rebelling against the king?" Then I replied to them, "The God of heaven will make us prosper, and we his servants will arise and build. But you have no portion or right or claim in Jerusalem." So notice that after Nehemiah determines the status of things, that after he sort of like kept this quiet to himself, he's now prepared to go to the people. And I want you to notice how he talks to them in verses 17 and 18. In verse 17, basically what he says is, you can see the problem yourself. He says, "You see the trouble we're in, how Jerusalem lies in ruins with its gate burned." You know, when there's a real problem, all you have to do is point it out. All you have to do is be able to say, "Here is the way things are." And if people have a heart, as they should have, if they have a mind to work, as they ought to have, that's going to be motivating to them. They're going to say, "Yeah, you're right. I haven't thought about it, but things could be better. Things could improve." And the other thing that Nehemiah says to the people is in verse 18. In verse 18, it says, "I told them of the hand of my God that had been upon me for good, and also of the words that the king had spoken to me." So Nehemiah points out what needs to be done, and he tells them what God had said. That's the basis of his appeal to the people. As we go through this theme this year, that's the approach that I want us to take, is to say, what is the status of things? And what has God said? And let's let that motivate us to build and to work as we should. It's also interesting to notice the things that Nehemiah does not say. Do you notice that Nehemiah doesn't dwell on the 90 years that they have just been slacking off? He doesn't belittle them. He doesn't beat them over the head. He doesn't even like try to figure out who's to blame. He doesn't say, "Okay, you guys, let's get together and figure out who dropped the ball on this." But he says, "Here's the way things are, and here's what God has said." All of that other stuff was in the past, but Nehemiah is focused on the future. He's thinking about moving forward. Well, as Nehemiah convicts the people of what needs to be done, you see their response in verse 18. In verse 18, they say, "Let us rise up and build." Nehemiah's message was inspiring to them. They knew what needed to be done. They had it in their hearts to do what would please God, but they needed a spark. They needed somebody to point it out. They needed somebody to push them a little bit. But as soon as Nehemiah does that, they respond admirably. And it really pays off. In chapter 3, we see that the chapter 3 is filled with list after list of all of the people who did their part in various aspects of the work. And if you look in chapter 3, let's just sort of pick up in the middle of the chapter. In verse 15, it's just listing all these people that do all the different parts of the work. Verse 15 says, "And Shallum, the son of Kolhoza, ruler of the district of Mizpah, repaired the fountain gate. He rebuilt it and covered it and set its doors, its bolts, and its bars. And he built the wall of the pool of Shelah of the king's garden as far as the stairs that go down from the city of David. After him, Nehemiah, the son of Azbuk, ruler of half the district of Beth-Zur, repaired to a point opposite the tombs of David, as far as the artificial pool and as far as the house of the mighty men. After him, the Levites repaired. Rehum, the son of Bani, Next to him, Hashabiah, ruler of half the district of Keilah, repaired for his district. After him, their brothers repaired. Bavai, the son of Henadad, ruler of half the district of Keilah. Next to him, Ezer, the son of Jeshua, ruler of Mizpah, repaired another section opposite the ascent to the armory at the buttress. And so on and so forth for verse after verse after verse. You see, when people get a mind to work, it has a chain reaction. When somebody sees you doing the thing that needs to be done, they're going to say, well, what can I do? How can I pitch in? If all of these people are going to be working hard, then I'm not just going to be sitting by and slacking off. And so what happens is really beautiful here. That Nehemiah inspires a few people, and all it takes is a few. All it takes is a few people willing to commit to growing and to serving and to working. And what happens is the spark catches flame. And before you know it, you've got a whole group of people dedicated to the work ahead. Another thing I want to point out about the mobilization of the people is back in chapter 2 and in verse 18. After Nehemiah talks to these leaders, what they say in verse 18 is, let us rise up and build. Which part of that is the harder part? To rise up or to do the work? Do you ever hit your snooze alarm? Do you ever hit your snooze alarm like 7 times in a row? I didn't quite make it to 7 this morning, but I made it to at least 2 or 3. You know, it's like you get in your bed and you're just warm and you're comfortable. And for me, my watch started buzzing, but you know, you might hear your alarm go off and you just think, oh, not yet, right? And you just hit the button and you put it off. 7 minutes later, 9 minutes later, the button buzzer goes off again. You know, what I've found is that if I'll just get up the first time, it's a whole lot easier to do the work than if I just keep putting it off over and over and over and over. But you know what happens to us is sometimes we hit that spiritual snooze button on our lives over and over and over. We don't build because we don't rise up, see? And so what we need to do is to realize that if we would get up, if we would make the choice to begin the work, that a lot of times the work would be a lot easier than we feared it might have, a lot easier than we were afraid it might have been hard. And we get the work done. One other thing to notice here, though, is Nehemiah encourages the people in verse 20. You know, they have some opposition from some of these other guys in verse 19, but in verse 20, Nehemiah says, the God of heaven will make us prosper. That's a pretty bold statement. I wonder why Nehemiah could say that. How did Nehemiah have the confidence to say, God will make us prosper? How did he know that the people wouldn't get tired and quit? How did he know that, you know, despite their best efforts, they might fail? How was Nehemiah able to have such confidence here? And I got to think that Nehemiah has great expectations for their efforts because he has great confidence in the character of God. And the truth is, Jesus has promised us some things that are very similar, hasn't he? Ask, and it will be given to you. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and it will be opened to you. Paul wrote in Philippians chapter 1 in verse 6, I am sure of this, that he who began a good work in you will bring it to completion at the day of Jesus Christ. God has a pretty solid track record of responding to people who are trying to do the right thing. And if we're going to have a mind to work, we have to have a mind to work with a confidence that God will bless our efforts. You know that? That if you commit to this, if you try, if you put forth the work, God will make your work successful. It might not always look exactly the way we imagined it would, but God will give us good things if we'll dedicate ourselves to doing good. But there's a fourth part of this mind to work that we need to notice. and that's their perseverance. Their work was not without opposition. They started good, but as soon as they began to apply themselves, there was opposition that presented itself. And at the beginning of chapter 4, we see how their enemies begin to taunt them. If you look with me in chapter 4, beginning in verse 1, it says, "Now when Sanballat heard that we were building the wall, he was angry and greatly enraged, and he jeered at the Jews. And he said in the presence of his brothers and of the army of Samaria, 'What are these feeble Jews doing? Will they restore it for themselves? Will they sacrifice? Will they finish up in a day? Will they revive the stones out of the heaps of rubbish and burned ones at that?' Tobiah the Ammonite was beside him, and he said, 'Yes, what they are building, if a fox goes up on it, he will break down their stone wall.'" I got to give these guys some credit. I mean, that's some colorful insults. But they're taking digs at the people of Israel, and they're saying, "Who do they think that they are? You know, these ruins have lain there for so many years. What are they trying to do? They're not going to be successful." Have you ever started to make changes in your own life and had people show that they were in opposition to you in similar ways? Begin to doubt you or even insult you? To say, "You know, I don't know who you think you are trying to be like a church person now. I know how you've always been. I'll believe it when I see it." We've got to have the perseverance to just keep doing what we know is right no matter what other people think. Do you suppose that if this church developed a mind to work and began to grow and apply ourselves to growing in all the different areas that we've listed, that people might start to notice? And there might even be some people that would doubt. See, what Nehemiah realizes is that other people's doubts mean nothing to him. It doesn't matter what anybody else thinks. It only matters what God thinks. And Nehemiah prays to God in verse 4. He says, "Hear, O our God, for we are despised. Turn back their taunt on their own heads and give them up to be plundered in a land where they are captives. Do not cover their guilt and let not their sin be blotted out from your sight, for they have provoked you to anger in the presence of the builders." Nehemiah takes the doubts of the people and he turns those doubts back over to God. He says, "God, they're not doubting us, they're doubting you. I want you to prove them wrong." And that leads us to our theme verse in verse 6. In verse 6 it says, "So we built the wall, and all the wall was joined together to half its height, for the people had a mind to work." As the story goes on, the opposition gets worse. The enemies move from their insults to violence, and the people actually start to become discouraged. If you look in verse 10, it says, "In Judah, it was said, the strength of those who bear the burdens is failing. There is too much rubble. By ourselves, we will not be able to rebuild the wall." Despite the ups and downs that they've had, despite the encouragement that they've received along the way, eventually the opposition starts to get to the people. And they look around and they say, "You know what? There's just too much rubble. I mean, there's rocks everywhere. There's all these, like, ruins around us. How are we ever going to get to all of this? It's just too much." And over the course of this year, we might start to feel that way. If we are to address item after item of things that we can work on and should work on, and we start to think, "Man, we need to work on our worship, and we need to work on our families, and we need to work on our evangelism. It's just too much for us." We might feel like Judah and say in verse 10, "By ourselves, we will not be able to rebuild the wall." But what I want to suggest is that Judah was right. By ourselves, we can't do it. If it was just a matter of our own strength, we would fail miserably. So look at what Nehemiah reminds them of in verse 14. In verse 14, "I looked and arose and said to the nobles and to the officials and to the rest of the people, 'Do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord, who is great and awesome, and fight for your brothers, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your homes. See, Nehemiah believed in a God who was great and awesome. And he wanted the people to remember that. He wanted the people to remember that that is the secret to perseverance. That when we feel like we're not strong enough, we need to remember that we have a God who is. And there's no limit to what he can accomplish in us. And so we have to keep fighting. We have to keep moving forward. We have to keep building the wall one brick at a time, one day at a time, one moment at a time. And in verse 20, Nehemiah tells them that they have a God who will fight for them. We have a God who will fight for us. I like how Paul says this in 1 Corinthians 3. You know, in 1 Corinthians 3, Paul is talking about his work as an apostle and as an evangelist, and he talks about his work along with Apollos's, and he says, I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the growth. And it's in verse 9 of 1 Corinthians 3 that he says, we are God's fellow workers. Have you thought about yourself that way? That God wants to be your co-worker. That's a pretty amazing thing to think about. But what Paul knew is that if he was faithful to God, that God would be faithful to him. That if he fought, God would fight with him. That if he worked, God would work with him. And when God helps our work, his contribution to its success is far greater than our own. That's what God is inviting us to. That's what God is calling us to. That if you will work, I will work with you. If you will work, I will work for you. If you will work, I will work in you and through you. Just like he did so many years ago with the people of Israel. Well, the last verse that I'll read is in chapter 6. As we said earlier, in Nehemiah 6, the wall is finished. And look at verses 15 and 16. So the wall was finished on the 25th day of the month, Elul, in 52 days. And when all our enemies heard of it, all the nations around us were afraid and fell greatly in their own esteem. For they perceived that this work had been accomplished with the help of our God. You know what will happen if we develop a mind to work like Nehemiah and the people? What will happen is that God will bless this work and God will change this place in a powerful way. And people around us will notice. People in other congregations, people in various churches, maybe in this place or other places, maybe even people that live in this community will find out about the things that are going on here, and people will start to talk. They will. They'll say, man, have you heard about what's going on at Lawrenceville? Like, they've started doing this thing and that thing, and they're growing in this way and that way, and man, it's really impressive, the changes that are happening there. That's really inspiring. But you know who gets the credit and who gets the glory for all of that? God does, because he's the one that deserves it. When the people developed a mind to work in Nehemiah, they built the wall in 52 days, and all the nations around them said, wow, look at what God has done. Let's have a mind to work in 2022. Let's dedicate ourselves to doing everything that we can so that God will do everything that he can with us. And God will change this place in a powerful way. And God will get the credit and the glory here that he so deserves. If there's somebody here that needs to make your life right with God, you have an opportunity to do that before we leave. If you want to become a Christian, or if you need the help of this church to deal with some sin in your life, we want to make sure that you know that you have an opportunity to do that before we break. If we can help you in any way, please come to the front. Let us know how we can help while we stand together and sing.